Hey, everyone. Welcome to Respect Our Authority, Wisecrack South Park podcast. My name is Jared. I'm joined here by Wisecrack's video editor, Ryan.
Howdy ho.
And one of our writers and directors, Mike Lux.
Howdy ho from Texas.
And introducing for the first time another one of our writers from New York, Amanda Shirker.
Hey, glad to be here.
All right, so last night was the premiere of Season 21, Episode 5 of South Park, entitled Heroin and Hummels. Let's go ahead, before we dive in, let's get some first impressions. Let's start with Ryan. Ryan, what did you think of this episode?
Well, if you remember last week, I gave last week's episode, I think, an F-. And then this week, slight improvement, D+.
God, rough, rough, rough. All right, Amanda, what did you think?
I'm going to go with a solid B. It had some real nice, like, vintage South Park feels to it.
B's a good grade.
Yeah, yeah. Solid B.
You liked it.
I liked it. Right. I laughed a lot.
Yeah, so did I. I'm going to get on the B train. I think it was a good episode, a solid B. Also, just a lot of comedy that is particularly in tune with my taste, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But
well, you know, I have first-hand knowledge of this because, you know, I was a birthday performer that might or might not have gotten stoned a few times.
I wasn't going to bring that up. But yeah, I mean, that was actually the first thing I thought of when I saw Chuck E. Cheese coming in a kid's birthday party super fucked up. I was like, isn't this a little bit familiar? So
puked a couple times. Anyway, keep going.
If those of you who don't know, when Ryan and I first moved to Los Angeles, Ryan was a birthday clown dressing up his characters such as Minnie Mouse, Cookie Monster, Mickey Mouse,
SpongeBob, the freaking Yo Gabba Gabba dudes.
Yo Gabba Gabba. And why don't you tell us about that experience and, you know.
Well, just briefly.
The ideal state of mind to be in when entertaining children.
I mean, basically, I'd have like I'd go to this person's warehouse in Los Angeles and pick up like 5 costumes on like a Friday. And then all day Saturday and Sunday, you know, I'd be Mario and then SpongeBob and then Mickey Mouse and had my medical card and took full advantage of it, you know, my first couple of years in L.A.
You know, also it's very hot in those costumes. So, you know, it's like a painkiller, you know, you've got to.
Yeah. I was Elmo a lot. Elmo is honestly probably my favorite character to be. But
can I ask you a question about that really quick?
Sure. Go for it.
Is there like a different acting methodology when you're Mario versus SpongeBob versus?
Oh, hell yeah. Every character is totally different, you know.
And you're like,
Mario, you get to talk like this. And then Elmo, you just talk like this. But it's pretty much the same, you know. It's just you change your voice. Yeah, that's all it is.
The physicality is the same.
That's all the acting is. I'm not an actor, by the way. But
Ryan also did Gwen Stefani's kid's birthday as Yo Gabba Gabba.
Whoa.
That's amazing.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into a quick recap of the episode. So it's Marcus's birthday, but the birthday clown dressed up as Chuck E. Cheese is fucked up on painkillers and ODs in the middle of the party. So Marcus decides to investigate the opioid epidemic that's killing birthday clowns all over South Park. Meanwhile, Stan brings his father Hummels, which are collectible figurines of German children, while is also pressuring Stan to deliver crochet pillows on behalf of Miss McGillicuddy, who is the top bitch who rules the inside because she has the best Hummel collection. Stan soon realizes that he is the drug mule, as the crochet pillows are filled with prescription drugs being smuggled out of the nursing home. After a while, Marcus is hot on Stan's trail, and Miss McGillicuddy starts mad-dogging Grandpa Marsh because Stan has been buying him Hummels instead of getting them from the ass of opioid addicts. So in order to save his family from McGillicuddy's wrath, Stan and the boys infiltrate the old folks' home dressed as a barbershop quartet and steal Mrs. McGillicuddy's Hummel collection and give it to Grandpa, making him the top bitch. Marcus confronts Stan, and Stan convinces him that the retirement home drug trade is just merely a small part of a larger scheme. So Grandpa gets all the Hummels, puts them in a sack, and beats the shit out of Mrs. McGillicuddy, becoming top bitch. And then at the end, Marcus infiltrates a pharmaceutical industry party to persecute the real villains, or the real perpetrators, of the opioid addiction. End of episode.
Boo.
Do we think there's like a second part?
Right, yeah. Is this not a fucking cliffhanger two-part episode?
I mean, it seems like it has
to
be.
That's how I took the ending.
You mean like
which led to me not liking it as much either.
You mean of Marcus actually like trying to make some sort of social change?
I don't think that was an ending. It would have been kind of he just goes, "Hey, you motherfuckers," and then
I can see that, but I don't know. I don't think they're going to keep going with that. I think I would be surprised if they moved along with it. To me, it was just like, you know, they spent the whole time of this episode not really making much of a social statement on the opioid addiction. And then, like, you know, just as kind of like a nice button to end the episode, they make a very concise statement of, oh, you know, fuck the pharmaceutical companies.
I think it was definitely a come back next week and see what he does to this group of pharmaceutical doctors. That's how I'd
say it. I saw it as just we're meant to believe that.
I mean, what is he going to do? Just yell at them? He didn't do shit.
Well, we're meant to believe that Marcus is like this, you know, this Serpico-like character who just never gives up. And, you know, he's going to just bring them down because he's just sheer will.
I mean, I'm with Butters on this one. Like, Marcus just kind of sucks. Like,
right. I agree.
What isn't he from an earlier episode? Does anyone remember what episode Marcus is in previously? Because I've seen him before.
I did not remember him.
Okay, maybe not.
I'm on the old Google machine. I'm on the old Google machine. I'm not seeing anything.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. So this is it's Marcus Preston is his name. Did anyone get any, like, I was always wondering, is he supposed to be a particular kind of idealistic kind of Boy Scout cop figure from like a movie or TV show? Did anybody get any hints?
I was trying to figure out what they were going for with that. And yeah, part of me, I can see the Serpico connection. I could also see, like, you know, Trump has said some stuff about the opioid crisis recently. You know?
I don't know, but Marcus is way too much of a Boy Scout and benevolent
exactly.
to be Trump.
And then also there's the whole opioid crisis in the Philippines. I don't know but I don't think that had anything to do with it, but it crossed my mind.
Yeah, there was the two that came to mind for me were actually also Serpico and then also Poirot. There was some Poirot and like his whole like, you found them in the anus of birthday party performers. Doesn't that seem irregular?
Like those. What's Poirot?
Poirot is the detective from various Agatha Christie novels, like Murder on the Orient Express. He's
I think that's probably pretty apt.
Yeah, this guy's less French though.
Yes. Yeah, he doesn't have the accent. I have to credit whoever the fuck put this on Reddit, because I was trying to figure out who Marcus was, and somebody on Reddit was like, is this Chris Christie? And I was like, he kind of looks a little bit like Chris Christie. I don't know.
Yeah, but Marcus is like good.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
true.
Chris Christie,
he sucks.
You know,
yeah.
He chills on the beach and gets
and
a lot of sun.
Hates bridges.
But what does Chris Christie have to do with opioids?
He's pretty outspoken about the epidemic because he's.
Oh.
I remember seeing a video of him talking about like a college friend who is, you know, like top of the world and, you know.
Highly doubt that Marcus is supposed to be Chris Christie. But, yeah. But my big thing about this episode was just like, okay, it's called Hummels and Heroin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what a fucking Hummel is until before this episode. Okay, so to me, I was like, it was another time where South Park does this thing every once in a while. I think we talked about this before. Where like my example is the pan flute thing, where they're like, oh, this is such a big deal, this trend, this pan flute band. Trend. I'm like, what? I've never fucking heard of a pan flute band in my life. And then this is the same thing where they're like, oh, this trend, old people love Hummels. I'm like, what?
Well,
so I'm like, A, am I missing out on this? But then, or B, are they just being really random and silly? And then two, I can't believe that I don't know, the heroin epidemic thing, I thought, I can't believe I'm the one that's going to be saying this, but I thought it was pretty insensitive.
Wow.
Like, it was kind of like, it'd be one thing if they were saying anything about it, but like you said, it's literally just window dressing. Like this opioid epidemic is just something that's going on in the background, which I guess it is in reality. But I mean, it's kind of like they were totally. I just don't think
there's anything nuanced to say about the opioid epidemic. I mean, it's
right,
just
exactly.
Truly,
then why make an
tragic.
Episode about it? It truly is tragic. Exactly. There's people dying from, you know, fucking fucked up drugs that and they didn't say anything about it. They just kind of made an episode about it. And like, haha.
I think it's not quite. You know, they say nothing about it. They just don't make the episode about it. Like they have There's other references.
Unless this part two is going to get into
more
of the meat of
it. The only thing they say about it is that, you know, oh, the pharmaceutical companies are profiting off of addiction. Well, that's all
right.
They say.
Oh, yeah, and, like, we didn't know that.
And they talk about how, like, these drug crises happen in places where people are cast aside and society doesn't care about them. And, like, that could take us to, like, the heroin den or whatever, but that just takes us to the old folks' home. But I think that the idea of sort of cast-off societal detritus is, like, not connected to the opioid crisis. Like, I think you're right. They're not making like a total like episode long statement about it, but I think they're saying more than nothing.
I don't know. I didn't take it as anything. I just thought it was like a plot point for them, you know?
Yeah. It's a plot point that gets like a little more work than a regular plot point, but I don't think you're totally wrong about that. I think I basically buy that.
And here's the thing. I mean, I love South Park because of how fucked up and dark they go and how they touch things and no one else touches, you know? So that's, it's not like, you know, I'm super sensitive about that. It's just that I thought like, to me, I was watching this episode and I wasn't laughing at all. The only time I was laughing was, you know, the hip hop song at the old folks home, which was amazing.
Oh, there
was,
you know? Just a quick note on that. It's crazy to me that they got, what's his name? They got 50 Cent's cousin.
Killer Mike.
Killer
Mike,
yeah,
that was fucking
awesome.
Killer
Mike was on there. And then Stitches was on there. And 50 Cent's cousin, what's his name? Five Seasons or whatever.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, that was incredible. They had such a crazy array of rappers on there. Continental Five, not Five Seasons. That's a hotel. But yeah, that was
Four Seasons.
Yeah, see, I don't know. Five Seasons is the one you've never heard of because, you know. If you don't know about it, you certainly can't afford it. But yeah,
I was just sitting there watching this episode being like, man, I was just pining for season 9 when I thought things were funny, or season 19 when things were funnier, or just back in the old days when, and I just thought, I was like, this is kind of like tasteless.
Yeah, I kept waiting for like the smart South Park connection moment where like they said something that like went beyond and I like made me be like, oh, like I didn't think of it that way, like I'm a hypocrite or something, but it just never
it was just like
came.
Haha, people are dying.
I can agree with that. You know, it's funny because I'm usually the one, at least with Rick and Morty, who's always pushing for, oh man, I wish they said something. I wish that there was like an intellectual backbone to the episode. But with this one, I don't know, I kind of appreciated that, you know, we always talk about how South Park, you know, it used to be that when South Park was always kind of commenting on whatever the front page news was, you know, like back when like the SARS episode, well, SARS was on the front page of everything. But these days there are other things that are on the front page. And, you know, and obviously they said they don't want to focus on Trump because you can't make that funny.
So then they focused on the oil crisis.
Well, no, but they focus on other. Well, I don't know. I think that's actually, in a sense, that's valid because we don't talk about the opioid crisis as much as we talk about other things. And so I appreciate A, that they're bringing this to the fore, and B, once again, sometimes I don't think they need to do anything other than just have like the opioid crisis be just the background of an episode. And then as long as it's funny, you know, and once again, there's not a lot of nuance. There isn't a lot to say other than, you know, it's fucked up.
Yeah, then why make an episode about it? I mean, they could have written an episode about fucking anything.
Well, that's fair. It seems like they do want to stay contemporary, and they want it to be a contemporary satire focusing on current events. And once again, if that is part of their mission now, it's one thing to say, oh, well, they don't have to do that. They can start just making random funny episodes. And, you know, I think that's a valid perspective. But I think that this is a good way to comment on something that doesn't have a lot of nuance, you know, but still staying relevant.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think there's a natural comedy from the opioid crisis that gets us to this episode, which is like, I mean, okay, full disclosure, I've written a pilot that's floated around for a minute that's very similar to this episode, actually. So I'm sort of biased towards it, but the idea of the opioid epidemic, one thing people don't super talk about is like, where do the opioids come from? It's like they get them from doctors, but like not everyone can go to a doctor and get oxycodone all the time if you don't have insurance, whatever. And so this question of like, how do people actually get these oxycodones, Percocets, whatever, is one that like needs an answer. And the answer being...
and you learn something?
And the answer is being like old
pillows
folks...
Pillows at an old folks?
Well, that's why it's a comedy answer, not an actual answer, right? Like that's why it's like funny cartoon and not the news.
I mean, I do feel like the most pointed, like, commentary moment was when, you know, Stan was like, yeah, you could get my grandpa put in jail, but that doesn't actually solve the problem, which is that, you know, massive multinational corporations have a huge, like, stake and profit off of, like, all these people who are dying. So I felt like that got a little bit incisive.
Yeah, it felt like there was, like, a thematic backbone, less than, like, an explicit backbone. Like, you can tie that moment to stand at the table talking about people who are cast away and thrown aside. You can tie that to just old folks in general, and also these, like, birthday performers who, like, no one seems to give a shit about because, like, they just are dying everywhere.
Right. So sorry, Ryan. That's another interesting thing about the episode is that, you know, when people talk about the opioid crisis, I mean, similar to how most news stories or, you know, like, I mean, the whole reason why the opioid crisis is a story is because it's affecting, you know, like middle class homes, not just the poor, you know, and usually when we talk about it affecting middle class families, it's because of overprescription. And that isn't, I mean, I guess that's kind of hinted at for, like, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, but we really don't see any presence of a doctor that is prescribing this to these people. And in a sense, I feel like the episode is focusing more on how it affects, like, poorer communities that, you know, do get the drugs through some illicit method, because a lot of the opioid epidemic is not from people getting the prescription drugs without a prescription. They're actually getting it with a prescription. And especially with, you know, like the birthday clowns, once again, you know, they're all, like, struggling, you know, people that, I don't know, maybe you made a shit ton of money as a birthday clown, Ryan. I don't know.
Great job. Made a lot of money.
No, I mean, I generally agree with, I think I agree 100% with that, like, this is asking a more interesting question of, like, obviously there's a set of things in the context of, you know, the opioid epidemic that is, like, people getting overprescribed and stuff, and that's for real. But there's also a ton of people who don't get overprescribed, and it's like, where does their shit come from?
From drug dealers and,
right, exactly,
and their friends and family. I mean, to me, it's like...
Yeah, but it's not like those people get, like, script
pads. This is all obvious stuff to me, I guess. You know, it's just like, yeah, drug makers make money off drugs, and, you know, people abuse drugs, obviously, because it makes people feel fucking good. And where do they get them? From their friends and family at the doctors. It's just like, I don't know. There was, like, it was a window dressing in this comedy show, and it had no point.
But we don't,
and it wasn't funny.
But we don't see people getting it either overprescribed or from friends and family.
I'm just saying, in real life, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, we see, like, the huge delivery truck. Like,
yeah, the dump truck.
Yeah, like, that was a pretty funny moment of, like, you know.
Yeah, that was awesome.
We complain that there are, like, you know, millions of these pills floating around, and, like, it comes from a source. I mean, also, I think the issue of blame is kind of central. Like, you know, we look at, you know, the clowns showing up all, you know, fucked up on painkillers, and we're like, oh, what a loser. Like, why is he doing this? And, like, yeah, I think it kind of just casts doubt on where the blame should fall, maybe, like, with the doctors. But again, yeah, they could have illustrated that more actively. I agree.
So, right.
So yeah. The one thing I disagree with there in terms of that shot where the dump truck dumps all these medicines is Stan has a line where he tells Mrs. McGillicuddy that, hey, don't take my grandfather's painkillers because he's in a lot of pain and he actually needs those. So, yeah, I mean, you could say if it was a dump truck going to a doctor's office or something like that and dumping all that. But I mean, I think a legitimate argument could be made that in an old folks home where people, you know, need medication, you know, it's not exactly the best setting to make a statement about the overprescription of opioids.
That's right. I mean, fair. I think that old folks home, I mean, the amount that I know about the thing I'm going to say is exactly zero. So if anyone wants to email it and correct me, that's totally cool. But I'm doing it anyway. I would be stunned if a huge amount of sort of this the opioids that are out there don't just come from places like old folks home that have that stuff on stock or get delivered, like nurses pilfer stuff, or even like kids visiting their grandparents like grab a couple morphine tablets on the way out. Like I think that happens, and I think that turning that from sure, old folks homes are a place where lots of people get opiates to what if it was the old folks themselves or if people get opiates is a pretty good joke. I think that's a pretty good joke.
I agree, but I think
it's a pretty funny joke.
Like I said, I like the stuff about the prison old folks home.
I mean, that's the bulk of the episode. Really, the only other plot is the thing with Marcus. And I mean, I could give or take that. I mean, I didn't hate Marcus. I didn't think he was like, oh my God, I can't wait to see more of this character.
Yeah. I wish he'd been more Poirot, honestly. It would've been really funny if he was like aggressively French and like very interested in time and his mustache.
And had a little pipe. I would have loved that. Yeah.
That would have been so good.
So let's talk about something that is pretty present in this episode on multiple levels. And this is a kind of comedy that always makes me giggle. And it's kind of this juxtaposition between like things that are very white and urban rap culture. So, you know, before Ryan mentioned the Hummels, which is just a stand in for homies.
Is it? I didn't get that till you just said.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. So like
Hummels.
What?
Oh.
No. You know, homies are like those things that you can get in like those little quarter dispenser things. They're like the little figurines. They're called homies.
Now I have no idea.
You can get those from one of those gachapons. Sure.
What did you just call them?
A gachapon?
What is that?
It's what they're called. There, it's a Japanese thing.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. And people, definitely in urban areas, love to collect homies, and maybe even in prison. That was not what I'm not entirely sure if collecting homies is actually a thing in prison. But yeah, I mean, homies figurines, at least used to be. And this is another thing of like South Park making a pretty old joke, but they used to be a huge rage. I mean, like people would like line up for like Walmarts to open so that they could like, you know,
I'm learning a lot right now.
Yeah.
Use the homies dispenser. So it's just so funny that and like, you know, when I think of at least prison movies, I've never seen homies present in a prison movie. But if someone told me that, you know, people collect homies in prison, I would believe that. So then it just makes it all the more funny that like, you know, OK, well, in an old folks home, instead of homies, which are all, you know, like African-American and Latino, or at least mostly, now there are Hummels, which are all just like the whitest, rosy cheeked German children.
Oh, see, I thought that the Hummels were just Hummels because old people love Hummels. And that's a true fact about the show. Like my father is
Lex and Amanda. Did you guys know about Hummels before this episode?
Big time, dude.
I did Amanda? Not, but I. Okay. It was like a relief to realize what these little creepy figurines that my grandparents have are called, and that they're like a thing.
Oh.
So
okay, yeah. So you had seen them before.
Yeah, yeah. I'm familiar.
See, I had never heard nor seen nor. I didn't know what the fuck was going on.
See, I didn't think Hummels were a real thing. I thought it was just a homies joke.
No,
Wow. See, we had four completely almost different interpretations or
my
or
my
first
father,
impressions of what we saw.
My father, the rabbi. Hangs out with a lot of old people.
Your father's a rabbi?
I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no. Rabbi Jack Luxenburg, shouts out Temple Beth Ami.
Way to go.
But yeah, he hangs out with old people a lot. Also, he's old. And a lot of like the congregants who are very old have like, not like maybe the glass case or a big shelf or like a mantelpiece that are all just like, whether they're Hummels or some other form of like, porcelain German figurine of children, they're omnipresent. Like, old people love those shits.
So I just love how throughout this episode, especially with the homies and Hummels, then we have the songs where once again we see like, you know, the most kind of like suburban setting, very white, and then we hear like kind of dirty southern rap, especially with Killer Mike. And
well, they have that Stitches song that's like "Have My Money When I Ask For," whatever it is. That one,
so good.
That song's
amazing.
Great,
so
but
funny.
That song's also like a trap anthem. Like, that's not just like a random hip hop song. That's like a song that's very much tied to like the song's like "Throw the Brick in Your Face" or whatever, and it's talking about like a brick of cocaine. Like, that song is like aggressively not for old people.
Yes, right. and it's such a
Hence the simple
juxtaposition. Yes. That I think has been done before, but it never fails to tickle me.
So good.
I was laughing my ass off pretty much every time, and including when the kids do the whole a cappella group. You know, they do the milkshake
good.
Thing, the Cypress Hill Insane in the Membrane.
Rape Me.
Green Day's When I Come Around, Nirvana's Rape Me.
Spin Doctors, Two Princes.
All so good.
Yeah, the Spin Doctors one was the one that made me laugh the
most.
Yeah,
me too. Yeah. That was the one that got me so bad.
I mean, for me, it's always when they mix hip-hop and, like, little white children is always the funniest thing to me.
Oh, yes.
So.
Always good laugh.
Yeah.
Never fails.
So since we're all big movie fans here, I was wondering if any of you guys felt that there were any specific references to prison movies, because prison movies are a pretty distinct kind of subgenre, and... I think a lot of the tropes of, like, whether it's just, you know, people standing in the doorways looking menacing, or, you know, even just the whole Hummels thing, or, you know, just the top bitch thing. Was anybody reminded of any particular prison movies?
I mean, well,
there was a lot of Oz going on. Not a movie, but...
No, see, I haven't seen Oz.
I mean, it was definitely a pastiche of prison movies.
Sure.
You know, what more so than the specific ones that I got, at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe Oz.
No, I mean, Ryan, I think, spot on with that. Like, they just have all the things that happen in prison movies, but are in so many
it's
prison
mainly
movies,
like
that's not a specific
that very
reference.
One very specific, yeah, that very specific shot of that's that, you know, with the dolly shot going down a row of cells and people just kind of hanging out in each one. That's
totally.
In, like, every prison movie, you know?
Yeah.
And then just the power structures thing.
And, like,
yeah, the
people
power
eating
structures...
in the cafeteria and lifting the weights, even though they had, like, the plastic weights.
Yeah. The one thing that I, and I don't know, this is probably not a deliberate allusion, but it definitely reminded me of it. I think Ryan has definitely seen this movie. Have you guys seen the Alan Clark movie Scum?
Sure.
No.
Sure.
So, you know, at the end when Grandpa Marsh takes all the Hummels that are in the bag and just beats the crap out of what's her name, Mrs. McGillicuddy and her posse, it kind of reminded me of this movie Scum, which is a very fucked up movie. So if you watch it, I warned you. But I love the movie, but it's a very early Ray Winston role. And basically, instead of the top bitch, it's called the Big Daddy. And he becomes the Big Daddy with, instead of putting Hummels in a bag and using the bag to beat the shit out of people, he puts a pool ball in a sock and then, like, you know, whirls the sock around and smashes a guy in the head with it. And then he becomes the Big Daddy. So, I don't know, just like Hummels in a bag, pool ball in a sock. I thought maybe there was top bitch, Big Daddy. I thought maybe there's a thing. I mean, I don't know if Matt and Trey have seen that movie. It's a pretty obscure BBC film from, like, the early 90s, maybe even late 80s. But that movie's fucking awesome.
Yeah, highly recommend.
That movie rules. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one. I think Ryan calling it a pastiche was, like, pretty correct. I think the whole thing was more about setting mood and, like, establishing the idea than it was a particular joke. Like,
yeah.
You just want to draw that parallel of prison to retirement home, and they, like, went super ham.
I think it was a direct parody of Scum.
That, I wish it was.
That would
be
good.
The hitting over the head felt, like, a little bit, like, off game, maybe, just because I'm like, what's the, like, old...
Off game?
Yeah, like, you know, like, the game was that everything that's... Like the joke, the ongoing joke was, like, everything relate, like,
improv,
like,
terminology.
Take the comparison from prison and put it in the retirement home. And I kind of was like, what does the top bitch in the retirement home do? Does he, like, you know, steal the good bingo card or something? Like, I don't know. Like, the hitting over the head felt like, I don't know. It didn't feel as clever.
I like that. Well, I mean, to Jared's point...
It's kind of the metaphor just broke and it became literal. And then, like, you know, Grandpa says, that's how we do it in the nursing home.
Yeah.
Which I love that line.
That's a good line.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty solid punchline to the joke. Like, that's one thing South Park does that I love so, so much is they'll take a thing and make it like a different thing or referential of a different thing. And push that as far as they can, and then eventually towards the end of the episode just snaps and they just become the same thing. And I find that to be always pretty funny when they do it, and this was a really good example of, like, you know, a retirement home's like a prison, and then it's like, oh, it is a prison. They're just beating each other with Hummels now.
Yeah, I buy that.
And I think that's one of my favorite techniques that they use. I like that move a lot. But also, it can seem kind of dumb, I think. But this time, it didn't to me.
So I want to bring up one more small detail. This is when Marcus is confronting Stan while Stan is trying to steal the Hummels. And it's a very small detail, but I think it kind of is in line with some of the themes that the other episodes have been talking about. And it's just simply that Marcus sees Stan stealing the Hummels and he takes out his phone, takes a picture and says, I'm going to end you. And, you know, like similar to the two episodes ago when we talk about, you know, Randy dressing up as Columbus and his, he's always being watched, you know, when he's throwing the Indian off his lawn, there's a guy walking by and he's got his phone. And, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that do we think that this is an idea that they are deliberately sprinkling into each episode? And do you think that this episode continue. You know, like Alex said in one of the previous ones, that his thesis about this season so far is that it's largely about people's reactions to social issues rather than the issues themselves. Yeah. And I'm curious to think if you guys think that still holds up with this episode.
Yes, I 100% agree with the thing you just said, Jared, because there's been this social media idea and this idea of like reactivity and the construction of like the discourse and all the episodes, just like even in this one with like this snap. And then also, like, I know we might talk about this later, but a huge component of the video game they just put out is getting Instagram followers.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the whole menu is just your phone and apps.
Yeah, and like there are quests that you can't complete until you have a certain number of followers on the social media thing. Like, that seems to be a major preoccupation for them this season in and this question of like, what do we do when there's like this sort of constant threat of being socially mediaized? Because there's not I don't have a verb for it.
Like, I thought that was good. I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Thanks. But yeah, I mean, I think that's like the looming question of the season.
I bet you $5, Jared, that next episode begins it's a two-parter from this one week, and then that picture comes into play that he took. You know what I mean?
Really? See, I don't think they're...
I think Mark is going to have that picture.
The only serialized element here is, which we unfortunately did not get to see this episode, is the Heidi Cartman relationship. I miss that.
I really miss that. That's been my favorite part of this season, are the scenes between Heidi and Cartman.
I'm fine for them taking an episode off.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they can take an episode off. But you know. So why don't we spend this time, because I know at least Lux and I are both playing The Fractured Butthole. Amanda, are you playing it by any chance?
I am not, but I'm intrigued to hear.
Me neither. But I mean, I'm very intrigued. How is it, guys?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Now, having said that, I have not played the first one yet, The Stick of Truth, although I did download it because it comes for free when you buy The Fractured Butthole. So I am probably going to play it after the second one, which I know is probably not the best way to do it, but
the story is
got to stay with the new stuff.
And the story is not super contiguous, so I think you'll be all right.
I don't want to give the fans too many spoilers, but like, how far are you, Lux?
Well, funny story. So for some context, I have this polyphasic sleep schedule where I sleep 3 hours and I'm awake for 3 hours and I sleep 3 hours and I do a whole day and
you're
start
doing
over.
That? That's awesome.
Yeah. But last night, working on the upcoming episode I'm directing, that's a teaser for you audience. I won't tell you what it is. So I was up late doing that, and then I was up past my bedtime one. So I stayed up from bedtime one till bedtime two playing the South Park game. So I played a lot of it, and it rules. It's a super good, just like tactical RPG style video game.
So dense with jokes. It's such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And the references go back really far. Like, there are totally things I forgot about or characters that I forgot about who pop up in the game. And they also are super duper recent. Like member berries, for instance, yeah. Show up.
You can explore the ruins of Soto Sopa.
Yeah. it's a joy of a game, and it's pretty well designed. The story is pretty good.
How is the difficulty compared to the first one? Because the last game I played was Nier Automata, and it was just so freaking easy. And now that, like, you know, this game, it's like, oh man, like, I've actually had characters die. You know, I've actually had to use revival items.
Yeah, it's about the same. It's pretty similar. They're pretty well scaled games, honestly. Although I'm not the best person to ask, because I get very into those kind of games, so I'll just be like grinding and leveling up and crafting the best possible thing and being a huge dork. So I'm probably over leveled, so things are pretty easy, but I think it's pretty well balanced. I mean, it's just like, it's an impressive game just in that every mechanic of the game is very South Park. Like, there's nothing that happens that isn't very South Park.
And even like every item that you pick up that's just like an item to like forge something is a joke from the series or a shout out to a previous series or just a really funny gag.
Right. You'll get like Butters is like signed pictures from Raisins or something, or yeah. Or like vials of cat pee or whatever it is. And it's yeah. Oh, it's so dense. I'm very proud of this game. I just think they did a really good job. And I think that it's most games like that, especially American-made RPGs in that style, like, tend to bum me out pretty bad because they kind of miss the mark on some stuff. And this game kind of crushes it, which makes me really happy because I haven't had a good tactic style RPG to play since XCOM 2.
All right, guys, so it's time to move on to the mailbag. This first question is from James. His email is titled The Decline of South Park. So he basically says, do you think the show is becoming too tied to being political and having an in-your-face message instead of the satire being subtle and the show being random and gross?
No. I'd say that they're not being political, really,
well,
in this season.
Well, this episode is definitely probably the least political of the whole season so far.
Okay.
But to your point before, you said, like, well, if you're not going to make a statement about opioid addiction, like, why make it about the opioid addiction at all? Why not sub it for some other really silly plot?
I'm sorry, but what was your question in that?
Well, you're saying that it's not political and that the desire to be political is not harming the show. Is that, that's what you just said, right?
I said that I think that for as politically charged as the times are, that they're kind of going out of their way to really, you know, they're not doing anything with Trump. They're not doing any of the big political things. And yeah, they're doing these kind of smaller issues, which I guess are on the forefront, you know, like I guess Confederate statues and stuff is a pretty political hot button issue. But it's I think that just the decline quality of the show is just more just that it's just not funny. That's as simple as I can put it. I mean, like some of these issues that they're doing shows about, I would like to see funny shows about, but it's just not landing with me. I think that's as much as I can say about it.
I mean,
personally,
for me, the funniest episode of the season so far, like, was the most political, with the one about, you know, if your president put down your phone.
Yeah, that was my favorite too.
So I feel like when it's good political commentary, it can still be some of the best of their material. But I think, yeah, I think if anything, they've been smart to stay away from like the Trump, you know, vortex that got them so trapped last season. So
yeah, I'm not saying that they should do Trump. It's just that, you know, it's a very conscious decision of them to not do it.
Yeah,
right?
You can almost feel them not doing it.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
in a very real way.
Every second that's not about Trump, you can feel them not doing it about Trump.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean, though, right? Like you can tell that there's like
yeah,
a,
no, I get what you say.
Impulse
yeah.
to make it happen, but they're like, no, we can't do that. I think that like South Park, at least like from the past 4 or 5 years, we can sort of make the assertion that like as a viewership, we expect sort of three things, right? Like, we want there to be like funny one-off quotable jokes. We want there to be like a coherent story from the beginning to the end of the episode that's also funny. And we want there to be like some kind of point. And I think that so far this season, there haven't been a lot of episodes that do all three of those things well. Like yes. The Alexa episode had some really good one-off jokes and had a decent plot, and the point was either muddled or pretty good, depending on who you ask. But it wasn't like excellent in all three fields, and their best work on it is. And I feel like this season, people are pointing at different signifiers of declining quality. Ryan's like, it's not funny anymore. Email man is like, it's too political. Straw man person who I've never met is like, it's not political enough. But whatever, there's, you know, reasons for all these reasons. I just think that there's this like tripartite system that makes South Park good, and they have yet to like fully activate the boost thrusters on all three parts of their spaceship show.
Well,
that metaphor is super fell apart.
On one hand, I really agree with you. On the other hand, like my favorite episode of all South Park is the episode where the Pinewood Derby episode where Randy doesn't use all the parts, like uses extra parts that are not in the Pinewood Derby box, and it makes, you know, that super Pinewood Derby car that goes out and then aliens come down and force him to put a Pinewood Derby car together. Anyway, that episode is just a very simple, just silly, completely silly plot that has nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with, you know, a thing that was ripped out of the headlines or anything. And I think that they totally have the ability, or they used to do that a lot, where it was just funny. It was just funny. You know, that was it. And then somehow then they got into, I wouldn't say a trap, but like a repeating thing where, you know, it was just about what happened literally the week before, you know. And I think it started with like the Terri Schiavo thing. That was like the first time they really did that. And then everyone loved it. So they're like, oh, shit, let's do this all the time. But I don't know. basically they just need to either pick one, either just do a funny episode and actually make it funny. They need to do what they used to do with, you know, the modern stuff or the headline stuff, but like, again, actually make it funny. I don't know. Like you said, they're not hitting on all cylinders, anything they do.
Okay, so this next question is from Jedediah. He said, while watching, this is about the previous episode with Mark Zuckerberg. He said, while watching the episode, I was shocked that Trey and Matt did not show more about personal responsibility. Why do you guys think they intentionally chose not to talk about people needing to learn how to evaluate sources and instead putting all the blame on Mark Zuckerberg and the manipulative assholes of the world? Basically, the two major thoughts I have is that when is it the responsibility of consumers to know that what they are reading is not trustworthy, and really how much blame can Zuckerberg and creators like him take when they are not just working for themselves, but for huge teams of people under a giant corporation? Should people not create or innovate because it has the chance of spiraling out of control and out of your personal ability to fix it? Zuckerberg, in my opinion, created a metal pipe that could have been turned into anything. But through the influence of many, many more people, that pipe was shaped into a cannon.
So there was a tweet about this recently, and Twitter is where I learn everything. And the point was basically, the tweet was along the lines of like a quote from a fake programmer, Silicon Valley, and the quote was basically like, look, I'm just building this death robot. What people do with it is up to them, right? Like, yeah, to a certain point, people are making choices on Facebook. People should check their sources and do all that. But Mark Zuckerberg did create a system that got out of hand, and there were many opportunities on the way. And yeah, no, Zuckerberg's like a synecdoche for the entire Facebook company in a pretty clear way. But like, the shit that's wrong with Facebook is shit that Facebook could have prevented a lot of times.
And I mean, it's shit that they... Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's shit that they like enable because they like... News, like fake news stories are inherently super, super like viral and clickbaity, and Facebook's algorithms like have make those stories like seen by everybody. So, I mean, and they profit off of fake news, which is, I think, part of why they haven't done more to stop it.
Yeah,
that's my conspiracy hat.
You know, they could finance an entire city of Skrilladelphia.
But I mean, but to get into, I think, what the email writer is saying, though, I mean, how much, I mean, at the end of the day, the people, there's human beings that are putting the news stories out, and then there's human beings that are consuming them, and, you know, buyer beware, like, don't believe everything you read. Is that like
we talked about this in the last podcast, and what I was arguing is that we're kind of reaching a pretty cynical age where it's now, you know, like, we can't expect people to be able to be smart enough to discern what is real and what isn't, because people will, because I think, I mean, there's a lot of reasons. One is, which is, like, you know, like, all we get our information just from, you know, images on the internet, sources. How do you determine what's legitimate and what's not? But secondly, because people just have this innate desire to believe what they want to believe.
And one kind of to further that point, like, about how you can't believe anything anymore. I was talking to my friend Poncho about this yesterday. Like, there's this new program out where basically you can essentially take live video or any video and, you know, make a video of anybody saying anything if you have enough video of them, right? Like, that'll be this thing. And in my opinion, if the first viral video that goes out where that's like proven to people, where people see, like, you know, Barack Obama's mouth moving and he didn't actually say it, but a computer program made it, you know, the uncanny valley kind of thing, like, that's just going to be this paradigm shift where now not only can I not believe anything I read, I can't believe anything I fucking see. You know, I can't believe a video that I'm watching of somebody either I know or have seen before, you know, saying anything anymore. Like, think about that, right? And how that'll change people's behavior.
All right, last question. This comes from Justin. This is about Mark Zuckerberg as kind of the Shaw Brothers / Bruce Lee reference. He said, just wanted to say I also found the decision to make Mark Zuckerberg's character a riff on an old Shaw Brothers film annoying and unfunny, but he knows why they did it. Think of it from a plotting perspective. They have these kids playing superhero, and like kids do, they play fight with imaginary abilities and have sound effects made with their mouths. But ultimately, what they need the kids to do is battle with Zuck. If they're writing the character like any kind of normal adult, he wouldn't engage with this play battle. He'd just be a guy they kick in the nuts until he fights back. And while that may have worked just fine, it doesn't provide him with a proper superhero fight. So he said, it wasn't a particular commentary on Zuckerberg, although they did use the opportunity to also comment on an apparent inability to keep him out of our personal lives, i.e. block them. So, yeah, what do you guys think about this? I mean, I think that he
like
is,
that email.
I think he's justifying it, but to more to his point, more to Justin's point. By the way, Justin lives in Austin, Texas.
Hey, Justin, come to my house.
Yeah. but yeah, more to his point that he made up at the beginning, it's still weird and not funny.
And we also got an email from Henrique Kadotu that said, he's a kung fu master because he speaks Chinese.
Huh.
That's all it said.
Zuckerberg speaks Chinese. I know he has a...
Fluent Chinese.
His wife is of Chinese descent, right?
I believe so, yeah.
If it's that easy to be a kung fu master, I'm downloading Duolingo today. And then I'm going to punch through that fence that blocks me from walking to the Revolver Sushi place behind my house.
Even if it's because he believes in, even if it's because he speaks Chinese, or to Lux's point last week that he, you know, is awkward during their VR presentation, it's just a matter of like, you know, how much does the average person know about Mark Zuckerberg? You know, really they don't know much more about than they learned in The Social Network or right. that he created yeah. Facebook, you know? And so if you're creating a joke that's going to be consumed by a mass audience, it just, yeah.
It was also
like the Hummels thing is still funny, even though I didn't know what Hummels were. I can see, they're figurines that look very white and it's like kind of like a prison urban setting juxtaposition. Okay, I get it. But like, I was just trying to figure out what the joke was. Like, even just like, what is that voice? Like, it just took me so long to figure out.
To Justin's point, it was all supposed to come home at the end whenever they had the big fight. And you were like, he's you know, the foil to their superheroes, you know? Like, so.
Yeah, but if he was like a villain, you know, and like wore a cape or something, or even just had like a villain voice that wasn't dubbed. And he wasn't saying things about, like, my shtoyl, then I think maybe the payoff would have resonated a bit more. But it's still just a clusterfuck of weird references that don't really pay off.
Right.
Yeah. And, like, there's so much to make fun of with him, really. Like, I thought at first that it was just going to be a joke about how he, like, is pretending to be a human being. But
right. That could work. But why... Why a dubbed kung fu master? Like, it's so specific.
Exactly.
It's because of the VR thing. I'm telling you. Like you're right. Like, I think Justin's email makes a good point about, like, in a sort of roundabout way justifying it. But it's not like, even Justin's email, which I think is well observed and well articulated, they can do that same thing, like you're saying, with just a generic supervillain, or if he was like secretly an alien or a monster or whatever, like they could get that same end game. Or just a crazy guy. And so I think this specific thing is like, I swear that VR thing was a bigger deal than we're giving it credit for. Like, people,
Amanda, were you aware of that?
I was not until I heard your guys' episode.
Okay. I swear to God, we're going to talk to one person who's not me. Who knows that.
I got
to
say, we also didn't get any emails of people saying, oh, it was so obvious it was the VR
thing. Okay, when this is over, I'm putting the VR thing in the Wisecrack chat, and you'll all watch it and be like,
Okay, I look forward to that. All right, thank you for all your questions. Just to remind you guys, if you want to send us more questions or comments, send it to southpark@wisecrack.co. That's .co, not .com. Also, want to remind you guys that we are continuing The Squanch, which is our Rick and Morty podcast. We're going to be doing content every other week, so be sure to check in for that. We're going to be back next week with the next episode of South Park. And I think around the corner, we're also going to be piloting our movie podcast soon, so be on the lookout for that. Also, we have new episodes of the Thug Notes Get Lit podcast, so look out for that. I want to thank Amanda for joining us. It was great having you.
Thanks, guys. This was fun.
Yeah, awesome. And until next time, guys, thanks for watching. Peace.
Screw you guys. We're going home. That was my Mario doing Cartman.
Also, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's me being shameless.
Goodbye, guys. Thanks for having me.